He made his spring training debut for the Blue Jays today. Of course, he is their most significant free agent signing of the offseason, one of the most significant free agent signings in some time by this team. Ben Wagner is our Blue Jays play-by-play voice on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and we're very pleased to be joined by Ben Wagner right now. So, Mr. Wagner, what did you make of Hyunjin Ryu's first outing?
Well, a guy that's been kind of through this ringer before, go out there, see how your body feels on the hill, throw all your pitches, see if you can throw all the pitches for strikes, which we know he could throw everything for a strike. It looked like a guy's traditional first go-round in spring training. It's interesting to dissect, you know, because he didn't have to make any massive pitches, but what you saw from him going out there, he located the fastball well. He got ahead, I think, of all nine batters that he faced. And made a couple of mistakes with fastballs high, and they got tattooed. He doesn't have overpowering stuff. So that ability to locate fastballs inside and out and keep it down in the zone are going to be ideal. But for a guy in his first real true test, I know we're about a week into actual game activity. This was his first go-around on the mound with an opponent, you know, versus somebody that's just standing around a cage and doing live BP and working on their own timing. So early returns, don't read too much into it, but the good news is he felt good. He felt good with all of his pitches, and he said his program out of even start, well, number one of a spring training will be to get the feel for the breaking balls later on, and especially that changeup, which I think will be the biggest pitch for him moving forward. He's okay with not having an absolute fantastic feel of the changeup like he did today. He didn't have a great feel for the changeup, but he said that it's okay as long as I'm ready to go on opening day.
You know, folks might be interested, are wondering why, you know, why today, why it's taken until now for Ryu to make his debut. You know, Trent Thornton's gone twice already, and, you know, who projects as maybe the fifth guy in the rotation. Ryu is presumably, this is all back time to, so that he's going to start on opening day. Why the difference in the way, let's say, those two guys are being handled in the spring?
He wanted to go up there and throw 40 or so pitches. He wanted to get more than just 25 pitches in a one inning, ramp it up, and then just shut it down thing versus the other guys that just were one and dones. He wanted to go out with the ability to throw 40 to 45 pitches. So he threw in an extra bullpen. He's done some extra work on flat ground. And it seems like working backwards, and I'm starting working backwards from opening day, this is kind of the program that Ryu was very comfortable with and talking with P. Walker. And he's a veteran guy that understands kind of where he's going forward. And I think the Blue Jays allow a lot of flexibility to those older guys. And there's been no urgency, not only with Hyunjin Ryu and kind of what they have set up. Tanner Roark and Matt Shoemaker haven't thrown for other reasons, but they haven't thrown either. But there's zero concern about getting those arms ready for the first go around in the rotation as well at this point.
And why haven't we seen the two of them yet?
Illness. Matt Shoemaker caught the bug that was here in camp. Tanner Roark brought an illness with him after dealing with some family stuff right before pitchers and catchers were scheduled to report. He was here on the day that camp opened up for pitchers and catchers, but he looked white as a ghost when I saw him in the clubhouse. He went out, and within his first two tosses, he said he was just drenched. His body was completely dehydrated, and the Blue Jays sent him home. He said, we'll see you in a couple of days. And then a couple of days later, Matt Shoemaker caught something as well, which is pretty much the norm of spring training across every major league camp. There's usually an illness that kind of pinballs itself around a clubhouse. But illness are the reason that those two guys specifically have not thrown to this point. But Matt Shoemaker indicated that he's going to throw on Monday. So that's really good news.
So because we just saw the news today, Chris Sale's been pushed back for the Red Sox because he's had pneumonia, essentially, right? And you know, there may be some other, they may be babying him along with his elbow as well. But is this going to change the timeline for Roark and Shoemaker in terms of, you know, the first week of the season?
Everybody that I talked to said no setback. Be ready for opening day. They're going to get their innings. The pitch count will be to a point where they're going to feel comfortable going 1-5, which is really important for the Blue Jays too, because now with the emergence of Trent Thornton, you look at 1-5 being a done deal at this point, barring any setback, and knock on wood, because I know you guys love to chat about only bad things happen in spring training, right? You know, as we stand today, it looks like it's Trent Thornton's job to lose. We're going to get another look at Shun Yamaguchi, and, you know, he's going to continue to be stretched out just as an insurance policy moving through the rest of camp. But I think there's little concern talking to the people around the office and the coaching staff right now with those guys. So that's really good news.
Ben, what's been the most impressive thing, or who has been the most impressive hitter slash pitcher you've seen, batting practice, in-game, bullpen session? Just the thing that really stood out to you.
Wow, that's probably a long answer, because we're getting our first look at guys like Patrick Murphy, and he's had to reinvent himself, and I thought he looked fantastic. I've seen him throw a couple of bullpens and twice on the mound. I thought he has looked absolutely great. Nate Pearson's debut in spring camp was as advertised. Julian Merriweather was about a free and easy, a right-hander that you can expect to see throwing 97 to 98 with consistency. You know, I say those three names right away, and two out of the three don't have a shot to make the opening day roster.
I was going to say that's pretty good.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
With those three guys, you know, Brian Baker's an interesting story too, a live arm. And the good news is, and not to take anything away from those guys, but you know, we had this run with Danny Barnes and Justin Schaefer and Ryan Tepera. Ryan Tepera had hard velocity at times, but he pulled back and fell in love with a cutter. You know, and then it's 92, 93 miles an hour. Those guys are just kind of carbon copies of each other. Their stuff is different, but, you know, the results are pretty much the same. When you talk about these new guys, it's completely different stuff. Higher velocity, different roles for Merriweather. You hope that he can jump into the rotation. And Pearson, obviously, is a guy that they're going to manage a workload, but once he gets to the major leagues, you hope that that's a guy that can chew through six or seven innings this year. And Brian Baker and Patrick Murphy, those guys are really encouraging to see because they add depth to the organization. For guys that may scratch the opening day roster, like Brian Bass, he looked really good. Ken Giles was way ahead of where he was last year at this point. Also really encouraged what you saw from A.J. Cole.
Wow.
Honestly, you know, he came out, he pounded the strike zone the other day. So those are a couple of guys that I think kind of jump off the page. Offensively, I think Travis Shaw is still trying to get his feet underneath him. Rowdy had a big day yesterday or the other day. I was in Dunedin. I didn't see Rowdy's game in Philly. It was a split squad game, so I didn't see it live. I watched the highlights. But, you know, Vladdy's to a point where he is a little trimmer in the midsection. His shoulders have bulked up. They spent so much time working on the endurance that his base, those hips and those thighs and the load that they'll have to carry, one with the body, two then with the duration of the season, he looks like he's in far better shape than where he was. And he's taking some big rips, but I think it's pretty much for a position player wise right now, just standard operating procedure. Nobody has really jumped off the page yet. And now in a week, if you don't see guys start to jump off the page, then we have some problems because you hope to see some guys have some timing down and hopefully come up with some better swings and results.
Ben, where's Jordan Romano's a guy that, you know, I guess has a chance to go north and be part of the bullpen. You know, because one of the questions we're going to have to answer here at some point, I guess, is, you know, Ken Giles is the closer right now, but because of where he is, you know, contractually, he might not finish the season as the closer. Unless they find a way to extend him, he won't be the closer long term. Someone's going to have to take that job. And, you know, you can go outside and try and find somebody, but an internal solution would be the best. You've got some hard throwers there. Several of them, you know, like guys like Merriweather, they still want him to be a starter if he can. But I'm wondering, you know, A, whether you think Romano makes the team coming north, and B, you know, who's in the mix to be the next closer of this team, if in fact Ken Giles isn't that guy long term. Who are the candidates that are there right now?
Anthony Bass, probably. If you could ease Jordan Romano into the process of being a closer, that would be ideal. If Ken Giles is not part of it, I think early on, because of who has done it in the past in high leverage innings and doing it through the American League. I think Anthony Bass is going to be part of that. But Jordan Romano has to be one of the guys that, one, even last June we were talking about, may get this opportunity. And only because of a roster's number crunch and the move that the Blue Jays didn't want to make, but because he had options, they sent him back to the minors. And then in the minors, he gets the oblique strain and it, you know, wrecks essentially the rest of the year. But the velocity is up. They have talked with Jordan Romano about being more aggressive and using that four-seam fastball and that slider, becoming more of a refined pitcher and just use those two pitches to set up the aggressiveness and keep those batters off balance. He's got the weapons to do so when they really turn him loose. And I think that's really one of the guys to watch on where he is over the next couple of weeks and to see if he's going to jump to the forefront of a wave that with this bullpen, you've got an opportunity to add a lot of fresh faces from where they were a year plus ago. And that's what you want to see. And that's what you want to see Jordan Romano turn to. Prior to that injury, he was a different pitcher than what we saw down the stretch. And he has, I think, every opportunity to continue to press the front office, because I know the coaches really like the stuff that's coming out of his
hand. Yeah, and you know, the other thing I kind of wonder about, you know, there's a lot there is like the Buffalo rotation is going to be pretty interesting, because some of these guys, you know, we're talking about the Murphys and the Merriweathers are presumably bound for there. I wonder what happens. You know, they're the Sean Reed Foley's and the TJ Zoiks, you know. You know, Reed Foley is a guy, a hard thrower, could be. A lot of people have looked at him and said maybe if they simplify it for him, maybe he's a guy who's a bullpen candidate. Zoik's a different guy, not a strikeout guy, but, you know, you kind of wonder whether those guys, is he destined to be a swingman in the bullpen or something along those lines? It's going to be tough for some of those guys, you know, those two guys I just mentioned, to be in the top four in Buffalo, isn't it?
It is, because one name that we left out there is Anthony Kay, who is probably the most impressive of the young guys in September last year, and even his first go-around in spring training was pretty solid, too, with what, you know, he was able to do in against the Twins down at Fort Myers over the weekend. That rotation and the insurance policies will be interesting. You lump TJ Zoik, Jacob Wagaspak, where does he factor in? He's not necessarily a lock to make the opening day roster. And if he's a starter, he's going to Buffalo to do that. Those insurance policies, they're ideal. But I think in terms of Wagaspak, how he's used in AAA, he may be a traditional starter. He has to be a long man because the Blue Jays may need him just because of the roster situations, you know, to have a couple of flex guys that you can summon up and then punch back to the minor leagues, depending on how things go. But it's really intriguing to think about that next layer. When do you bring guys up to the major leagues? Are you more comfortable with bringing guys up that have done it before versus early in the season where you hope you don't need them, but as guys build pitch counts, you don't want things to unravel, or if you get smacked with a couple of doubleheaders, all of a sudden, you know, that changes everything and it jumbles your rotation. But that next wave for me is really intriguing. But with the intrigue this year versus last year, you hope that they're not overexposed. And that became a glaring issue with the Blue Jays last year and the lack of depth for starters. And in the end of the year, they didn't have starters, let's be honest. But at least at this point, with some of the younger guys, you've got more potential with them. It's just who you're going to summon at that time as we sit and we wait on the Merriweathers and the Pearsons to come in and make a really big go at it. If Charlie Montoyo, the third week of the year, had to say, we need Anthony Kay up from AAA Buffalo, he would be completely comfortable with that. Mm. It's really interesting, though, on that next wave, the fringe guys of Wagaspak, TJ Zoik, which is amazing to say for a former first rounder. But
oh, ping, the that, dreaded ping.
That was a bad sound, wasn't it?
That always happens when the cell phone drops. Boom. Travis is beavering away, endeavoring to get him back.
So, yeah, so the Buffalo rotation, not that this is the Buffalo Bison show, but Nate Pearson, Anthony Kay.
Maybe a Patrick Murphy.
Murphy. I would think those would right now, I would say those are your first three. You know, yeah. Wagaspak is a guy who I think is a use. There's no reason for him not to be as the fourth guy.
I think the whole the whole composition of the Blue Jays bullpen slash rotation is also going to be dependent on Shun Yamaguchi too.
Yes.
Where is he at the end of spring? He's going to be on the team, but as what?
Yeah, I'm guessing with the period of adjustment.
Swingman.
He's your long man. And again, I'm not sure how often you even need a fifth guy early in the season. That's the other part, right? But let's say Thornton's the fifth guy right now, barring anything, any injury. Yamaguchi becomes your swing guy, probably along with Gavilio, mm-hmm. right? But I say, yeah, that there's a layer there. You know, again, think of where the next, after you got past the first five guys,
right,
on this, in this organization, where we were 2 years ago, and where we are now.
Yeah. Hey Ben, thanks for your patience. One question that, I mean, I haven't heard a lot of discussion about it this spring, but we know that we're going to have a three batter minimum in baseball this year. Not really a good time to be kind of a borderline lefty reliever in this game, is it? And I'm wondering how that has impacted what Charlie might do and how the bullpen may be composed. Because you for the most part, you can't have a loogie anymore, can you?
No, it's a terrible time to be a specialist in the game. And if you're Charlie Montoyo and some of the people that I've talked to about this and how you would use the bullpen, it kind of takes the pressure off of looking at your lineup card and not having a lefty on there, which if you're Thomas Pannone, that becomes interesting. If you're Kirby Snead, somebody that we've talked about last year and then mm-hmm. this year in camp, or Brian Moran, who was a nice story in September pitching with the Marlins and as a free agent right now in camp with a non-roster invite and getting a lot of looks too. I don't think that you necessarily have to have a lefty because of this. And talking with Charlie just recently about where the organization also has their theories on this or their philosophies moving forward, they feel comfortable taking the best arms, which I think is the right answer.
Yeah.
At the same time,
yep.
you want the best arms that you see, given the situations that you project them in, to be your guys, left-handed or right-handed or not. To me, that's the right way to approach it, too, because even if it's a young guy or a veteran guy, if he's thrown the best, you don't necessarily need to have Kirby Snead or Brian Moran or Thomas Pannone, who probably would be the leader in the clubhouse in those conversations, necessarily at your bullpen, and you can have him in reserve because the guy's got options left.
Yeah, I think that, you know, that's a great point, Ben, because, you know, you're going to be like occasionally you'll get boxed in with a difficult matchup situation.
Especially in the American League.
Yeah, it's going to happen, right?
Yeah.
But you're going to have to live with that, I think, right? And so you would rather have a live arm rather than the most live arm you have, rather than having a guy who's got very specific tendencies. Where you can take advantage of somebody's splits for one batter. It's not going to do you any good.
Right, and lineups are going to be made to counter that too.
Yeah,
and Charlie's been asked about it. I've read quotes from some other managers, and they're all talking about balancing out their lineup so you don't have back-to-back right-handers or back-to-back lefties in the lineup, depending on how, you know, whatever the personnel is available. But so many managers have already been kind of crafting their lineups, or at least their thought process now, to get their lineups balanced out so you don't have those favorable situations moving forward. And I think for the Blue Jays, all right, if this guy is getting tattooed by lefties, you know that he can power through righties. But that's the sense that I get, that because of the way the lineups will be constructed, plus what the Blue Jays have in their arsenal right now, they need to take the best 26 guys
yeah.
and the best cluster of bullpen arms that they can.
Yeah, and it also, you know, and it gives, and again, guys who have a little bit more length, who can go, multiple innings or go five outs or something along those lines, they have more value in this system too, right?
Very good, yeah. And that's one thing where you've got a guy that necessarily hadn't been leaned on to throw more than 15 pitches in an inning. Talking with some of the guys that have been specialists and how are they going to go through, and they're prepping for full innings, which is generally between 20 to 25 pitches. That's where they want to feel comfortable and have plenty left in the tank, because they know eventually the assignment will be to get three outs or even two outs, but they have to be conditioned to that point where all of a sudden they hit that 12 pitch mark. They don't want the arm to start dangling with another two outs to find, and pitch counts, as important as they are, especially with some of the younger guys that could factor in here, everybody has to be conditioned and mentally and physically to get three outs. And that's exactly what the Blue Jays are approaching, and which is not surprising. You know, that's been part of the conversation, but it's a great mindset to change for some of the left-handed specialists that we've seen in the past.
Yeah, you know, for one kind of small, kind of on the face of it, small rule change, It's a big rule change,
yeah.
In terms of the strategy of the game, isn't it?
It's a massive rule.
Go ahead, Ben.
It's a complete massive rule change. It's a complete massive rule change for the people it affects, and it's a great strategy changer
yes.
for managers, which is just really fascinating when you talk to pitching coaches and managers that we've seen already this year and how they're going to strategize when to make those moves. And if you can just get a guy an extra out in this situation, does it benefit you in the innings to come because of what you would have left in your bullpen? Yeah.
Well, as we were talking, Kevin Smith singled to tie the score. It is 3-3 after nine innings between the Twins and the Blue Jays. Just what we all love, extra inning baseball in the Grapefruit League.
Or they might call it a tie, right?
They run out of pitchers?
Is this
do you run out of pitchers?
Down after nine, yeah. Is that a tie? Down.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. It's done then.
It's a tie.
It's a tie. So Kevin Smith, there you go. Kevin Smith singling in the tying run. Ben, as always, thanks for doing this. We'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Hey, I'm waiting for you. Come on down.
Take care.
See you, Ben.